Hello, thank you so much all for coming. It's with great pleasure that I get to kick us off today with looking at how we can use new technology to explore the language environment in the home. So I do research with very little babies as well as older kids in the first few years of their primary school. So the key question that I think we're all going to be discussing is how can new technologies open up entirely new research possibilities? And for me, it enables us to do research faster, so we do quicker data collection, quicker analysis time, quicker coding of our data, and our data is now more scalable, so we have bigger data sets, and with bigger data sets, we can ask more nuanced research questions. It's cleaner, so once we've got the initial reliability established between the humans and the machines, we can have the machines do the coding and the data is cleaner, less likely to be influenced by individual coding error. And it's more sympathetic, well, our version is more sympathetic in the sense that it's easier for our parents to participate in the research when they have the sort of technological device rather than the intrusiveness of an experimenter coming to their home and watching an interaction between mother and baby, for example. So this all together gets us to accelerated progress. We get to the end goals that we're interested in faster. So we get to do our analysis faster, our data is in faster, we can write our papers quicker, and therefore the implications of our findings for practitioners are able to get out there into the real world a lot quicker when we use this technology to support our research. So what I'm going to be talking about today is using specific audio capture hardware and software, so that's the analysis tools, to listen in on parent-child talk. So here is our hardware. So this is a little Lena recorder. It's about this big, so half the size of an iPhone or a smartphone. And we have little vests that the babies wear. So the baby pops the vests on first thing in the morning. Mum turns the audio recorder on, slides it into the pocket at the front, and that's it. She doesn't need to turn it off. It'll record 16 full hours of parent-child interactions or sleep or bath time or whatever's going on. And then we can download that data and it comes directly to us. So there is one of our participants modelling our tool. So she's wearing the vest and the audio recorder is there in the front. So the software behind the scenes, I'm by no means an expert, but what they've got is they have the child voice and the environmental sounds are coming in to the audio capture hardware, and they use specific algorithms to segment and appropriately identify sounds of varying intensity and amplitude, and then based on statistical probability, it's categorized into one of 8 different types of sounds. So we've got 4 human sounds, we've got the child sound, it can talk. Distinguish between other children, so if they're siblings, and female and male voice, which we extrapolate into fathers and mothers, but that's not always the case if the kid's out and about, they may be visiting other people. And then there's also 3 non-language, we've got, you can just determine whether it's silence, electronic noise, such as TV, overlapping speech, and just general noise, such as traffic noise, can determine whether a child's with how much duration the frequency of these kinds of noises. So once our software has done all that, it spits out something like this for each child. So we get the number of adult words heard per day. So here I've got it broken down by hour, but we can also break it down by 5-minute increments. The number of child vocalizations. So in this case, the children are around 6 months, so it's just babbles and coos, and it can distinguish between babbles and coos and cries, for example. And conversational turns, so that's contingent interaction between parent and child, or adult and child. And then we have the general audio environment. So this is the proportion of time that is in silence, exposed to TV or electronic noise, such as radio, overlapping, and the meaningful language that's coming into the child. So the Lena device can determine whether it's directed toward the child or it's merely overheard by the child. So the Lena device was developed in the context of this landmark study by Hart and Risley. So Hart and Risley, many years ago now, collected data from 42 families across 3 SES groups, professional, working class, and welfare. And so they recorded, they visited them in the home, and they recorded 30 minutes of home language environment every month for 2.5 years. So this is extremely research intensive. They transcribed and they counted up every word. And they extrapolated, but by the time the children had reached preschool, the professional children within a professional family had heard approximately 45 million different words. Working class children heard between 26 million words, and children from homes that were on welfare heard only 13 million words. And this is where the word gap of 30 million words comes from, this initial study. And why is this important? Is because they have the number of words the child hears has important implications for outcomes. So in the Hart and Risley study, being exposed to a higher number of words during development was associated with more positive linguistic outcomes, IQ and academic performance once children had reached school. Now the amount of speech directed toward the infant rather than just simply overheard, so that's adult conversations in the presence of the child or television language, was also specifically predictive to later vocabulary development in later studies. And parent-child turn taking in infancy also plays a key role. So that contingent conversational style interaction where mum or dad talks to baby and baby coos and babbles back. So if we think about the far-reaching implications of these linguistic differences is that by school age, we have children in the same year one classroom, so these kids are about six, sitting next to children with 2,000 word vocabulary, sitting next to children with 10,000 word vocabularies. And when we start to think about the process of learning to read, those children with higher vocabularies learn to read a lot quicker because they don't need to acquire the meaning of the word at the same time as learning to read the word. So in the context of this huge word gap, the Lena Foundation developed this hardware and software package to start to provide parents with feedback, automatic feedback on how many words they were saying in the home in a bid to raise the number of words that parents were saying, particularly for vulnerable families. And now Lena have a number of packages which includes both the feedback as well as tools such as increasing the amount of stories being read to children and this turn taking. So Lena Start, Grow and Home look at target parents, early childhood educators, as well as health visitors to give them these tools to support parental language within the home. So the Lena software wasn't designed specifically for research, it was much more practically based. But why would we use it in research is, well, to me it's quite straightforward. It provides naturalistic observation without the coding burden, really. So direct observational studies have been absolutely invaluable in allowing us to understand the parent-child interactions and the important implications that certain types of interactions have for later outcomes, but it's so labour-intensive. So 1 hour of parent-child interactions can take up to a full day for a researcher to fully code. So now what we can do in a day, we can do in 5 minutes of computer processing. So if we think about 1 hour takes a full day to code, we have 16 hours of interactions for each child, so that's 16 days of coding that we've saved for each child. We've got 90 participants in this study, so that's approximately 1,440 days worth of coding that we've now automatized, or 3.9 years of coding. Now, of course, we would never have embarked on a study like this if we had to manually code it, but this is the sort of time saved that we've got in a way if we wanted to ask these sorts of questions. But of course, it's not just time. We get increased volume of data, increased granularity of classification, so we can start to break down and have a look at specific types of interactions much more clearly. We have statistical robustness because we've got a much larger sample, not just of individuals, but of instances and behaviours within each individual. We have the flexibility of data, so we can ask much more nuanced questions. We've got increased privacy. So what I didn't mention at the beginning was that all this can be analysed without us having to listen to a word of the parent-child interaction. And some parents don't want us to listen to it, and some parents are absolutely fine. They say, fine, you can use us for reliability. All we do is discuss what we're going to have for dinner at the end of the day, sort of conversations. But a lot of parents were concerned about privacy and us listening in. So this can all the analysis can be done without us hearing any of the interactions. And of course, we get super fancy vests that we get to put on children. The second key point is that we can start to look at parental interactions over a long period of time in the home. So without the potentially intrusive presence of a researcher, a video camera, you can start to get at what's going on between parent and child. And we did, for a subsample of the 90 participants in this study, we did two days of recording because we thought that they may be the fact that parents would talk a lot more on day one because they know the audio recorder's there and they want to try and play up to it. But we didn't find any difference between day one and day two. And it also gives us, if let's say we're interested in specifically infant-led turn-taking, we've got a larger corpus of data to start to ask questions about these sorts of interactions. And it reduces the burden on parents. And this is particularly important for us because this is part of a much larger longitudinal study, and we don't want to ask too much of parents because we really don't want them to drop out later on down the line. So what we've done is we simply post the audio recorders and vests out to parents. They put them on the child at the beginning of the day. Once they're done, they pop them back in the mail and they send it back to us. So if there doesn't need to schedule a time to see the experimenter, if the child's having a bad day, they don't need to do it. They don't need to start rescheduling things. So a lot of parents fed back to us that it was a nice way of getting an extra bit of participation in this broader study without having to have the extra burden. So focusing down specifically on what we've done, we were able to do this extra add-on to a larger longitudinal study thanks to the Wellcome Seed for Science, which allows us to explore the feasibility of implementing something new within the context of a ongoing longitudinal study. And this is the New Fathers and Mothers study, which has a number of visits beginning prenatally all the way up to 24 months, and we've just put a funding application in to continue this to 36 and 48 months as well. And we've, having the LENA posted out to parents when their child was around 6 months of age. And the unique features of this study is that it begins prenatally and that mothers and fathers were both equally involved at all time points. So every measure that we did with mums, we did with dads, which is relatively rare in this type of research, especially the early stages of children's development. So while the larger study had 200 parents, by the time we got the funding and we had purchased the LENA devices and they had got through customs at Stansted, which took a remarkably long time, we were left with 90 participants because fortunately the children grow up and they were no longer eligible to participate. Broadly, the two standout things about our parent characteristics is they're slightly older than the average parent and they're considerably more educated than the average parent, and that's a function of it being in the Cambridge region. If we have a look at the infant characteristics, we have almost half girls and boys, and while we targeted to get data at 6 months of age, there was a lag. So sometimes we would post out these recorders to parents and we would call them every week, send them emails, have you done it yet, have you done it yet, and only at 9 months or 8.5 months would we get it back. So this was one of the downsides, and we had a backlog of parents. So as more parents didn't return them, our sample got older and older. So we definitely a learning experience with that one. So, but the majority of children, so almost 90% of children, were between 6 and 8.5 months. But it does mean that we need to start looking at age effects as well when we start to look at the word count. So while the LENA Foundation have done extensive reliability, we wanted to just double check that we were able to come up with exactly the same findings that the LENA software did. So we randomly selected 20 participants and we just coded it one 10-minute segment, and we chose that segment between 10 and 3 because that's when the majority of language was happening. And we my student transcribed adult word count, child vocalization count and conversational turn taking. So transcribed it and then just simply tallied it up. And we were happy to see that our intra-class correlations were high for adult word count, child vocalizations and conversational turn taking. So this was heartening for us that we could replicate more or less what the LENA software was doing. What we haven't got here is male and female talk, so that's something that we still need to pursue with our reliability. So our preliminary findings, so these are total word counts per hour. So we found that adults said about 1,325 words each hour on average, and this is about in the 60th percentile for this age, so a little bit more advanced. And the same for child vocalizations and turn taking, it's a little bit over what we would expect for this age, but I think that's probably a function of having a slightly more educated sample. So far so good, we were able to come up with reliability. Our tallies more or less were within the ballpark of what we would expect. So the Lena software is looking good. And then we started to have a look at the patterns of talk over the day. So here we have average adult word count with standard error. And as the Lena Foundation has also found, there was an increase of talk at the end of the day. So our overall patterns is mirroring that has been found before. If we split this by mum and dad, as we would expect, by 6 months, most dads are back to work, most mums aren't back to work. So there is considerably more talk by mums than by dads. And I dug a little bit and I thought, well, this is averaged across the whole week. Is there parity by the time we get to the weekends? Absolutely not. Dads are still not talking as much to their infants as mums, although they are talking more than they did during the week, as we would expect. Here we have overall adult word count directed towards their girls versus their boys. And there is no sex main effect here. So overall, the number of words directed towards their children is the same, whether the child is a boy or a girl, which is not what's been typically found in the literature. You're more likely to speak more to girls. So there is some work out there saying it's about 9% more words to girls than to boys. So we need to start unpacking this a little bit more and see why our findings are not matching up. And now we've got child vocalizations. You can see two dips, that roughly corresponds to nap times, a nap in the morning, a nap in the afternoon. And again, if we separate this out by gender, we can see that while there is no overall sex main effect, there is a trend towards boys talking more, and that's something that has been found in the literature, that boys are more likely to vocalise, and there are various theories about this. There's more, their temperament is more irritable, they're more likely to vocalise because they need greater soothing than girls, but we need to explore this further again. So this is really a proof of concept to see whether the Lena results can replicate that's been found using more traditional methods of language. So once we felt like we were on the right track and that the Lena findings were matching up to what we would expect based on the literature, we started to ask some more questions. And one of the key questions that we had within this welcome study was, are there differences with parents that are showing signs of depression and anxiety, and whether parents have a couple relationship issues? And we know that the transition to parenthood is a time of crisis as well as deep life fulfillment. So we had a look at the mental health and the couple relationship quality. So between 10 to 15% of women show signs of depression and anxiety in the perinatal period, so that's both before and after, and 10% of men show depression after the birth of their child. And more difficult to find solid estimates for fathers, but it does hover around 10% in the few studies that have done it. And we know that those parents that show signs of depression are likely to talk less to their infants. And couple relationship quality, we also had a look at, and we know that couple functioning has an impact on parents, but we don't understand too well how that impacts directly on language or the number of words spoken in the home. So that was more exploratory. And we get things like this from the Mail Online, that having your first baby makes parents unhappy, comparable to the divorce or death of a partner. So there's a lot of hype out there, and we just wanted to have a look and see what's going on in relation to adult language. So is the family language environment associated with parental well-being? It doesn't look like it. So by 6 months, or thereabouts, there was no association between 4-month depression scores or mum anxiety. We've got a trend here where the more depressed a dad is, the less they talk, which is what we would kind of expect, but nothing solid yet. So this is just on 90 participants, but yeah, we haven't found anything here. But a different story when we start to look at couple relationship quality. So increased satisfaction from dad and mum is in decreased mum word count, right? So we can flip that. So those that are less satisfied are talking more to their infant. And in terms of conflict, more dad conflict is associated with more mum talk. So there's two key theories about how couple relationships can impact on parenting. The first is the spillover hypothesis, where feelings and behaviours from within the couple are transferred to the infant. And there have been meta-analyses showing that couples that are less satisfied have poorer parenting, more harsh discipline. But there's also the compensatory hypothesis, whereby parents that feel dissatisfied within their couple put more effort into their parenting. And that's what it looks like is going on here. And I was joking with a couple of friends about this finding. It's like almost like you're telling the baby, can you tell daddy to go take out the rubbish? You're not talking to your partner, but you're talking more to your baby. So there's sort of compensation here. So what are our next opportunities with implementing more technological ways of coding and analysing our data? And obviously what we haven't got, and the big hole here, is the content of interactions. We know the number of words that are being spoken, but we don't know what's actually being said. So we know that content is important in predicting outcomes. So for example, in the Hart and Risley study, children in professional families heard more positive words compared to negative words, compared to working class, and even more than the welfare group. And children in professional families hear more positive affirmations in an hour. And so the ratio is 6-1. For working class families, it's 2-1. And for welfare families, it was 2 negative statements to 1 positive statement. So there's not just differences in the number of words, but there's difference in the contents of words as well that really needs to be unpacked. And a study by Claire and colleagues found that socio-emotional outcomes, so that's the child's social well-being, how well they're able to relate to friends, how they understand other people's mental states and emotions, while at age 2 was predicted by the amount of talk, so concurrently the amount of turn-taking that was going on between mother and infant predicted these social outcomes. But when we started to look forward at 3 and 4, it was the content of the turn-taking that really took on a specific role in predicting outcomes. So number of words might be riding roughshod over these important differences in what's actually being said. Now, these transformative technologies are coming, and I'm sure there's computer scientists in the room that know this a lot better than I do, but we this sort of human-computer interaction, so think Siri, think Amazon's Alexa, there's only a hop, skip, and a jump before we start to look at human-human interactions as well and use these to start to explore the content of what's being said. So Google is doing it. I know there's a group in Stanford doing it. There's Microsoft Watson, I think, is starting to have a look at some of the content of interactions, starting with human-computer and slowly moving over to human-human. And the next thing is understanding the emotional tenor of the parent-child interactions. So it may be that depressed parents are saying the same number of words, especially in this educated sample where they know that they need to keep talking to their infant. There's a lot of emphasis on that. But it may be that their emotions are more blunted or muted when they're talking to their child. And so families that express more emotions, both positive and negative, to a point, are more likely to have children with more adaptive emotion regulation strategies, better peer relationships, and more sophisticated social competencies. So understanding the emotional tenor early on is going to be really important for us to predict these socio-emotional outcomes. So we are actually using software developed by a team here at Computer Science and Engineering, and we have begun to look at these emotions within parent-child interactions. So this is the amazing team that have been supporting us doing this. And it's based on some software that they've developed to use in a smartphone app that feeds back to people about their emotions and the emotion eliciting context. So the true use of this software that we've sort of hijacked is in this Emotion Sense app, whereby it constantly listens to your interactions. Apparently it sucks your battery life like you would not believe. And then it feeds back. So you were doing this when you felt that, sort of start giving feedback to people. So while we are using the sort of back end of this when we're manually importing audio into this software to generate counts on different emotions, the future possibilities are to hijack hardware that parents already use day-to-day basis to not only use the emotion but also to start to collect our audio. And that would totally eradicate the lag that we had when parents weren't returning the sort of leaner devices and all this sort of kerfuffle that we had with our postal system. So this is a really exciting next step, is to start to use existing hardware and implement our own software to start to get and answer these questions about the family language environment. So broadly, what we really need to do is look beyond these traditional research methods and start asking technology questions alongside our research questions so we can do some really exciting science. Thank you.
Okay, we probably have time for one or two questions for Elian, if anybody has any.
Does the Lena device, does it also recognize speech or just like utterances or something?
It just uses that algorithm to sort of pull out word counts. Yeah. So what we can do is then use it to listen ourselves, so it does still capture the audio, but it doesn't use the words so much as the sort of features of language.
For the questions, can we please use the roaming mic so that we can actually capture those on the video as well?
Which mic?
This mic.
Okay, so we have a question here in the middle and then one over there.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, when you were asking these parents to do the Lena, were you asking them to only have the child wearing it
when they were with them, or did they also do it at nursery so that they had other adults speaking with them as well?
So at this point, no, none of our sample were at nursery, but they wore the vest all day whether or not the parents were with them. And what we have is they would record what they did in that day, so we know that between 1 and 2:30 they were with grandma, within between 11 in the morning and 11:30 they were at sensory play. So we have got the sort of broad structure of their day as well, but we haven't yet sort of started to look at that and adjust the data for those sorts of level of detail.
And just a quick follow-up, because you said about these differences between mothers and fathers. Did you look at any differences if the father was the primary caregiver?
None of them were the primary caregiver in our sample.
We've got a question about variability as opposed to frequency.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me if you have high variability, that might reflect something like mental health. Have you analyzed any of this?
As in variability?
Like standard deviations as opposed to means or frequencies.
So from a within child perspective, the variability that they hear throughout the day, so there may be peaks and troughs?
Variability from a parent. It could be that you could look at... Does this technology allow you to do rates across time?
Yes.
So, it could be that a depressed mother or father is more or less depressed at a certain time. So, Dana, in other words, what I'm wondering is, it's predictability.
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's something that I haven't explored
and
yet.
And variability might be an interesting way of getting at that as opposed to a mean or a frequency.
Yeah, and we know a lot about what inconsistent parenting does.
Yeah, exactly.
So, inconsistent language. Yeah. Especially with turn-taking, so whether there's periods of the day where they're more likely to do turn-taking and whether there's baby babbles that are not being reciprocated in that sense.
That might flesh out a relation between mental health and outcome.
Yeah, so what I didn't mention is we've actually got an additional group of people that we recruited specifically who had a difficult transition to birth, so either they were in the NICU or their mum was in hospital prior to giving birth for quite a while. So we've got that high risk group that we still need to have a look at. So I think that sort of variability aspect would be particularly interesting in this high risk sample.
Okay, one last question.
You mentioned concerns about privacy earlier, and I was interested to kind of explore that in relation to the emotion sense stuff, because if you're kind of rolling out software which is used much more for content, how likely are parents to want to use that if they're concerned about their privacy?
So the emotion sense still doesn't look at content, it sort of looks at the emotional tenor, so it uses similar software that Lena does to sort of get the frequency and pitch of the interaction to try and extrapolate an emotion from that. So we're still not looking at the content of the interactions there.
Okay, we've got to be quite strict with the times today, but please do grab Elian at the coffee break and ask any more questions. Thanks, Elian.